Welcome to Software Quality Talk. I'm your host, Mickey O'Neill. Today's topic, information security. We'll be talking with Randy Rice, Principal Consultant of Rice Consulting, about the testing aspect of this important topic. Randy, welcome back.
Thanks, Mickey. Good to be here.
Oh, boy. I tell you, you've hit one of my hot buttons here. Information security. Boy, with identity theft flying around, with people sneaking in behind firewalls and doing all kinds of damage, everyone from the Department of Defense to Dillard's.com, or anybody and everybody who has any kind of system has to be very, very concerned, especially in this day and time, about their information security.
That's right. That's right. And really, when you boil it all down, a company's primary asset is the data that they have, their customer list, their transactions. Everything boils down to data. If a company loses this data, they're really pretty much out of business.
Absolutely. You can replace so much, but that list, that information that you've grown and developed over X-teen years, 20 years, 30 years, how many years, how can anybody replace that? So you'd think that everybody, naturally, everybody would have to be just as vigilant as possible. Is that what you find in the field?
No, just the opposite. I think there's this assumption that it'll never happen to me, that kind of thing.
Really?
Yeah. Even major companies, there's kind of a misperception that it's purely a technical problem as well. It is a contributor to this, that people don't understand that they might have the best firewall configured correctly. They might have all the greatest virus protection up to date and all of that. However, someone working the help desk gets conned into giving someone that's not an employee a password because it's been kind of talked out of them, and so now there you go. There are ways to get around.
There's a breach in the wall.
Just about it. Yeah, right. Just about every kind of security.
So it's not purely a matter of whether I have the right protective software or the right type of firewall. It's not
right.
Technical. There's a human factor.
Right. It takes everything working together. But if you don't pay attention to the human issues as well as the technical, your investment is probably going to be frustrated by someone, because one of the things that we teach first and foremost in our security testing course is how to think like a hacker and how to think like a cracker. Actually, there's a distinction between the two terms. The hacker is the person that knows how to get in, that is maybe more of a programmer by nature, not necessarily with an evil intent. A cracker is someone that's got criminal intent, and hacker all kind of blended into the same
Kind of a cross
person.
Between criminal and hacker.
Right.
Exactly. Cracker.
A cracker. And when you look at how those people think, it's basically, no matter which level you work at, whether it be a technical level or whether you're just writing fraudulent checks, you're looking for ways to get in through security holes or through comfort levels that people have. You wind up building just a lot of trust and going through those areas where people get, you know, just kind of lax about what they're doing.
Well, with that being the case, how can you ever have a really comprehensive form of security testing?
Well, I tell people it's just like regular testing. You know, you're never going to find all the defects in any product. You're never going to find all the vulnerabilities in any given system. And even if you did, today is one day and tomorrow is a new day. Things change every day in companies. New software get installed and all kinds of things will change in the process. So I think looking at complete security is a misnomer even in itself. I think there's really, in my mind, at least two main objectives in security testing. Number one is to point out vulnerabilities to management so that action can be taken on those things. And number two is to prove that the measures that we've taken actually do work and are effective. But beyond that, it's a never-ending job. That job never stops.
It sounds like risky business no matter how you come about it.
Now, it really is.
When do you usually get called? Are there the stitch in time saves nine people, or are you usually called when there's already been an incident?
Yeah, and unfortunately, people typically don't call me until there's already a problem. Perhaps it's been a security breach in the past or even a major software failure. Typically, you know, I'm kind of like the doctor that gets called in when the patient's on the table having the heart attack.
Right.
Sometimes I get to do proactive work, and that's really nice. But more often than not, it's more reactive mode.
Fantastic. In that case, I guess you're basically their biggest hero.
Well, sometimes I'm their biggest enemy because I wind up telling them the things that really they didn't want to hear before that other people have tried to tell them. Typically, people that work for them and don't get paid nearly as much as I do, but I can come in from out of town with a higher rate, and they listen to me. And sometimes they listen to me. Let me rephrase that.
The definition of a consultant: when you work for the when you work for the boss, you've always got to say what you think the boss wants to hear.
Exactly.
When you're a consultant, you're paid the money to tell them the truth, whether they like it or not.
Right. Right. I don't have to live with them next week.
There you go. Maybe not even tomorrow, depending on
how well you tell them. I've had a couple of those as well. Yeah.
What do you see most of the time? Are there some things where you're walking me through the plant and you say, you see that open door over there, Mickey, or you see the mop bucket left on the floor over there? I mean, you know, those kinds of things only translated into mm-hmm. software. Are there the really common things?
Oh, I
come on, give away your secrets.
I'll just put it this way: I work in a lot of different companies in the course of a year. I visit probably at least 2 to 3 organizations per month. A lot of them are, you know, Fortune 500 kinds of companies, and some of those it would be extremely difficult for me to get in on the premises. Even others, I can do it in a heartbeat. No problem whatsoever.
But you're an expert.
Well, but I'm not that much of an expert. I mean, I do things that if I can do them, someone else has been doing these a long time in the past. I can get into offices. I can look and see papers that are laying around, things that should be shredded. One anecdote that I've been telling people recently was my wife and I, and this has nothing to do with corporate security, but personal stuff. But my wife and I were at a copy shop, that's copy, not coffee, copy shop
right.
a few weeks ago. And I was making some copies there, and I just happened to look in the trash basket next to the copying machine, and there was someone's house appraisal laying in there. Apparently, the person who had been making the copy just said, well, that copy didn't turn out as clean as I wanted, so I'm just going to toss it. They didn't even wad it up. It was just laying there. And I picked it up. I saw the social security number, saw their address, saw their previous addresses, basically everything I needed to know to go out and get credit in that person's
Goodness.
Name. I could have done total identity theft.
Unbelievable.
Right with that. And
but most people don't think about that. They don't have
not.
A criminal mind, so they don't think, you know, all is pure to the pure of heart. They don't think in those terms.
A lot of assumptions go on that people say, no one would really con me out of this. It really kind of brings me back to maybe a point in all of this that can give us a bit of leverage or maybe getting some traction on this problem. My experience in my own journey in this is I didn't become really aware of corporate security until I became aware of my own personal security. When I started shredding my own credit card information and my own things that I throw in the trash, then I became more aware of what I do in a workplace environment. Just throwing out policies to people and putting tools into place doesn't do any good if someone can call someone at their desk on the phone and get key information out of them. They've got to learn how to be more security aware.
Well, at the risk of turning this conversation into a tutorial for for prospective hackers and crackers, what kinds of things are the real red flag issues for you?
Well,
And it sounds like you're really not talking about the technological end.
Well, it's just not all, it doesn't have to be all that complex. Things like strong password policies.
You mean it's got to be 32 digits long and including one uppercase, one lowercase, and one
super
non...
Super cryptic and you can't memorize it.
non-alphanumeric symbol or...
It doesn't have to be quite to that extent. I do have some passwords that I'm sure no one could just randomly crack. But there are just some basic things like combining words and numbers.
Like if my name's Mickey, mouse probably should not be my password.
Right, right. Because, or first initial last name followed by the four digits of your phone number or your extension. I mean, hey, you know, Jerry Seinfeld does a routine that he says, you know, you go to the beach and there's a shoe. You think it's got keys in it? You know? Oh, yeah, I'm the first person that ever thought about putting my keys in my shoe. You know, yeah, you're the first person that ever thought about having your first and last name and then your phone number and a password or your birthday. Or, you know, so you want to make them, yeah, where you can remember them, but at the same time, make them where they don't contain common names. Make them where they don't have words from a dictionary. Make them where they're a certain length. Every digit longer is one more that's harder, makes it one more combination to crack. So passwords are one thing. There's something called the principle of least privilege. And
the principle of least privilege?
Yep. That's where, as a security administrator...
I think I live there. The principle of least privilege.
Yeah.
First comes the kids and the dogs. And then,
that's right.
No, I'm sorry. We're on a whole different show here.
The principle of least privilege says that when I set up your security, I'm the administrator, and I set up your security in a company, I only grant you the minimal amount of privileges needed to do what you need to do in your job.
Right.
Now, it's more work to do that because 2 weeks later or a month later, you might come back to me and say, or your boss might come back to me and say, hey, Mickey needs now to do this and this. That means I have to actually go log in and do something else to elevate your privileges. But I'm not starting you out at a higher level thinking that, oh, one of these days you're going to need this. Okay, that's a simple thing to do. Separation of duties. Your greatest threat might be within your own company. The person that signs the check, they need to have someone else countersigning with them. You never give to one person total responsibilities of just one financial area. And, you know, this is not new stuff. This is basic control 101 kind of thing.
Need plus opportunity equals criminal activity.
That's
and
right.
if you've got a group that, I mean, everybody in some time or other is going to think they need something, whether it's more money or revenge.
Mm-hmm.
So you just try to separate the opportunity and the need as far as possible from each other?
Right. That's right. Because typically a cracker or any kind of a thief will look at places that have the strong security and probably say, don't feel like messing with that today. Let's go to the next victim.
Go to the low-hanging fruit, huh?
Exactly. And there's plenty of it around.
Really?
Yeah.
Goodness. I don't know if we can get into the mind of a cracker as we would like for the purposes of protecting ourselves. I'm always and constantly amazed by the lengths to which people will go and the crazy and evil things that people think of that I would never think of.
Mm-hmm. It takes a devious mind.
It does take a devious mind. What is this? There's a new term I've been hearing. It's an old term, but I'm hearing it used in a new way. Social engineering.
Yes, social engineering is just taking advantage of... basically, it's a con. You know, it's just convincing someone, building a level of trust, so that you get the information you need out of them socially, as opposed to taking something like a scanner and applying it against their systems. So you're basically dealing with people. You're convincing them to give you the information you need, either over the phone. Typically, it's over the phone because you don't want to just reveal identity. But, you know, you can do it, you know, face-to-face as well. But it's just getting past security measures by your charm and good looks. I do that all the time.
I'm afraid I'm just going to have to keep making an honest living.
Yeah, that's where I'm at, too.
Oh, my. Well, we're learning today, folks, that information security is under greater threats than ever before. And today, with Randy Rice of Rice Consulting, I'm learning that it's not just the software and the hardware and the policies, but each individual needs to be on guard at every turn because the people that mean to do harm are more and more devious than ever before. When we come back from this break, we're going to talk a little bit about soft testing and hard testing in terms of security. We'll be right back with more after this. If you would like more information about some of the things we're discussing today, visit riceconsulting.com. Be sure to sign up for Randy's free monthly e-newsletter, the Software Quality Advisor newsletter. You can sign up right from Randy's homepage at www.riceconsulting.com. At riceconsulting.com, you can also see a complete list of training courses, articles, links, and places where Randy will be speaking and training in the near future. You can also receive online training and mentoring right at your desk when you need it at riceconsulting.com. Check it out today. Okay, welcome back to Software Quality Talk. I'm your host, Mickey O'Neill, and today's topic is information security, or the way I'm feeling right now, information insecurity. I'm talking with Randy Rice. Randy is principal consultant of Rice Consulting, and he is a software testing engineer and a quality assurance engineer, and he's here teaching me all of the areas where people can look into my soul, and I didn't really want them to at all. Randy, what is this business about soft testing and hard testing when it comes to security?
Well, that's a term that really is not maybe what you might call a standardized testing term, but it's one that I picked up in a book called Net Privacy. Recent book, very good if you're concerned with dealing with privacy issues in a company. Let's say you have a website and you want to make sure that you're dealing with people's information with integrity and that you're not doing things with it that would violate trust that people have there. And in that book, they talk about this division where soft testing is basically where you test what you're doing from more of the social aspect, like we were talking about social engineering before the break, where you actually try to see who's revealing information. Like one example of this would be, let's say you're someone that I do business with, and so you have access to my information. And so I'm going to have someone pick up the phone and give you a call and say, hey, Mickey, you know, I am looking for a mailing list of people that might want software testing services. Do you know where I could buy such a list like this? I mean, do you have any of those lists? And then just to see what your response would be. That would be an example of a soft test. And I would be doing, or I would have someone's voice that you wouldn't recognize and calling from a place that wouldn't, my caller ID wouldn't appear on your phone, obviously. Now, a hard test is actually where you're going in, you're testing policies, procedures, you're testing a local area network firewalls, internet firewalls. You're actually getting more into the hard nuts and bolts kinds of test.
I see. Well, it's good to have a way to draw distinctions there. Another term that kind of evokes thoughts of our common American West childhood, the guy that wears the white hat is always the good guy in those old cowboy movies. But here I understand there's something called a white hat hacker.
Right, and that kind of gets to the distinction of hackers versus crackers. There are several companies that are out there. In fact, even IBM has a division now that does white hat kind of testing. Sometimes you'll hear these called tiger teams, that their job is to try to break into systems.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah. I mean, hey, it's hacking from the good side, and you get paid for it. You don't get the same amount of money as if you were to steal a bunch of credit cards, but you don't have to do the time either. You know? So the white hat hacker is someone that tries to break into your system because you're paying them to, and they're the good guys, and you're just trying to find out where your own vulnerabilities are.
Kind of a security sparring partner.
Yeah.
Somebody that's going to test you.
Right.
What do you think, though? I mean, are these guys good enough? Is it worthwhile using the white hats?
Well, they're typically good enough. They have the skills.
Are they mean enough?
Well, and sometimes they can actually be devious enough. But the problem is you don't know for sure who they're going to be. You don't know where they came from. And you don't know where they're going after they've seen some of your deepest, darkest secrets in your company. Now, you know, I don't want to paint with just this huge, broad brush and say that, you know, everyone, you know, is suspect here. But I think one of the things that a company really has to look at before they bring on a firm to do this kind of testing is, number one, how much do you want to expose? Number two, how much can we trust? So it really does pay to do a background check on whoever's going to be your white hat hackers.
Oh, my goodness. You're going to have me leaving this place wanting to spray paint all my windows black from the inside.
Oh, no.
Scared to death here. Who can you trust? It's it's spy versus spy. But I guess that's the reality of the world we live in.
Well, it is a different world.
And so can we trust you, Randy?
Yes, you certainly can.
Oh, that's good enough for me.
Although I don't do white hat hacking kinds of tests. I just kind of train people in the issues and how to do it. And
so you keep all that at arm's length.
Yes, I do. And I also put a lot of caveats out there for the people who I train. For example, if you're going to do this kind of testing, you have to have authorization in place. You just don't go out and say, hey, I'm going to try to break into my company's system from home tonight.
Just
for fun, because they don't know you from a real attacker, and you could wind up actually being prosecuted for doing that. So this is a kind of test where you have to have all your ducks in a row. You have to have your plans in place. You have to have authorization. The element of surprise in security testing is really not what you're going for. You're not trying to surprise the security administrators. In fact, just the opposite. You don't want to turn your company upside down because you have now managed to unleash the Melissa virus in your company. Okay, this is something that takes great care, and a lot of the tools that we use, you have to take great care with as well, because some of these tools have come from the hacker underground and can actually contain Trojan horses and things.
Ooh.
So you might see this really neat little tool that you might want to use for testing. You download it and you find out that you have problems just because you've done that. And
congratulations, you just paid big bucks to infect yourself.
Right, and some of these infections are deadly. They will kill a machine. And they will not only kill a machine, but they will propagate throughout your network. And they will kill a server. They will kill all the other machines on the network. And
so how do you know how to do it without harming yourself or exposing yourself to potential harm?
Well, you do what I call the CDC model.
Centers for Disease Control?
Mm-hmm. You have an isolated lab. You have a network. You have computers networked together, but not networked with any other computers. And you've isolated your exposure. And, you're not testing on the real thing, but you don't want to test on the real thing.
So you test with animals, so to speak. You have an expendable network of computers where,
right,
if something goes wrong, your data is not really at risk. You're just,
right,
testing on it.
And
mm-hmm.
Keep in mind that there's always the potential that you might actually have to take these systems back down to the bare bones. You might actually have to do a total restore back to original configuration, because some of these viruses and Trojan horses actually get so deeply into a system you just cannot pull them out. They replicate and replace themselves from other machines. So it's a very, very dicey thing to try to fix sometimes.
Good grief.
Very nasty.
Is this a big area for you in your consultancy?
As I say, I do consulting and training. I don't actually do the testing itself, but I think, you know, in the post 9/11 world that we live in, the threats have changed significantly, and I think people are becoming more aware of it.
It's frightening stuff. What sort of resources do people need to know about when they're thinking in terms of security testing?
Well, they need to get on the alert list if they're not already. People like
there's an alert list.
Oh yeah, Computer Emergency Response Team, CERT. It's a division of the Software Engineering Institute. You can go to their website at, cert.org. You get on their email list, and as soon as a virus is identified out in the wild, as it's called, and maybe before the antivirus protection has been developed for it, they will send out an email alerting people when any kind of major security vulnerability happens, let's say with the Windows product. Or something has been discovered, they will send out notification. There's several of those. The ICSA is another organization that sends out a similar kind of email alert. So getting on those kind of alerts are good. The SANS organization, SANS.org, they have a top 20 list of the top 20 most common vulnerabilities and how to test for them out on their website at sans.org, I believe. So those are just some real quick and easy resources. There's some books out there that are good. The problem is that this stuff changes so quickly. There's conferences that people can go to. The SANS conference is a big one,
right,
for security.
Well, it always amazes me, Randy, how much information you stay on top of all the time. What are some of the better books you've been reading lately?
Well, the one that we picked as a companion text for our security testing course is one called Counterhack. And the reason I like the book is because it's very readable, funny in places. You know, as I say, and other people say, it puts the cookies on the bottom shelf where we can all get to them. Because even though I'm a testing guy and I have a development background, you know, when it comes to the inner workings of Unix and the TCP/IP protocols for networking and the where a lot of the vulnerabilities lie, I don't really know a lot of the intimate details of those, but that book lets me know what I need to know about security. And it also shows me how the attacks are performed. And so once I know how they're performed, then I can test to see if I can do them on my systems, or I can, you know, do them on a company system if we were to do it as a test project. So it's a great book. It takes you from a wide range of security topics. There's other ones out there. Hacking Exposed now is in its third edition. Hack Attacks Revealed is a much more technical book.
But these all sound like they're on the technical side. What about that social engineering? Is there anything out there?
There's two that are just great. The one that I finished reading recently by Frank Abagnale is called The Art of the Steal. Now, Frank was the subject of the movie Catch Me If You Can.
Frank Abagnale, he's the Catch Me If You Can guy.
Right,
okay.
He's the guy that was from the movie that Leonardo DiCaprio played.
Ah,
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And his story is fascinating. The book Catch Me If You Can is an interesting story. I'm glad I saw the movie first, because the book is actually a different account than the movie of his life, and I think actually more interesting than the movie portrayal, but you know how that goes.
Sure.
But that book, Catch Me If You Can, was entertaining. The Art of the Steal, anyone that has a checking account or a credit card or doing any kind of business in this life, they need to read that book, because it shows all the ways that scams and cons are perpetrated. He tells a great story. You talk about the social engineering thing. He tells a story about how he goes out and he buys a guard uniform, like a bank guard.
Right.
Okay, so he dresses up like a bank guard. Now, this is back in his days before he came.
Before he went straight, so to speak.
Before he went straight, exactly. So he's dressed up like a bank guard, and he puts a sign. He goes to a bank, and he puts a sign by the night deposit box, and he says, "Box broken. Give deposits to bank guard." And so he's out there with this...
You are kidding.
No, I'm not. With this sack or this box, I forget which. Anyway, he's just out there taking the stuff as people give it to him. And he eventually gets a whole sack of this stuff, and it's incredibly heavy, okay? And so he's trying to lift the sack over the curb, and he can't quite do it.
Oh,
and so these two policemen come up, and they ask him what he's doing. He goes, "Oh, you know, I'm just trying to get this stuff back to the home office. You know, we had a problem with the box, and I'm trying to take it back." And so they said, "Well, here, let's help you." You know, and so they helped him get the bag over the curb.
Oh, my goodness.
His car and all that, and he made off with the checks and everything out of it. And, you know... It just
do not try this at home. Those of you in the listening audience, do not try this. Mr. Rice is not endorsing.
No.
Oh, my goodness.
It's a hilarious story, though. And he goes into the ATM theft stuff and all kinds of stuff. Like, you know, there have been people buy ATMs, and just for the sole purpose of getting people's card information off. So the book goes into all kinds of stuff like that. The other one by Kevin Mitnick called The Art of Deception. And it's all about social engineering, and for folks who kind of keep up with security, they'll recognize Kevin as an infamous hacker, attacker personality. He actually did do time. He has now also gone the way of the straight and narrow and has a security consulting firm, and basically specializes in social engineering. But the book, The Art of Deception, really talks about how you can circumvent all kinds of technical stuff with social skills.
It doesn't matter how many dollars you've got invested in software. If Susie Secretary is willing to give away the password, it's all over.
That's right.
Oh, my goodness. So what does Rice Consulting offer in this wild and hairy, crazy world of social engineering and firewall failure and so on? What do you offer?
Well,
what can you do?
The primary thing we do is we train, and we have the 3-day training course that we actually get people to start thinking like a hacker, to try to find information. We teach about the different kinds of technologies so that they actually understand what an IP address is and what it's used for, and how those can be exploited, and we talk about what network scanning is all about. But more importantly, we try to raise the awareness of people actually of how easy it is to get into a system.
Goodness.
And you know, and it's not easy because we're brilliant people. It's just easy because the defenses aren't there. But that's right, because we're people.
Right. Right. It's walking a fine line there.
And it is a community effort. The FBI made this big point, and it's absolutely correct, that security is a community effort, because attackers can use lapses in one company's or one organization's computer to launch attacks onto other computers. So actually a very common thing to see. So it's not only awareness, but we've got to be aware as what we do affect how other people get to maintain their own security.
It is a frightening world, but it sounds like Rice Consulting can make it maybe just a little less frightening.
Maybe safer one company at a time. I don't know.
You just don't want to be.
And I hope I don't get hacked myself.
You don't want to be the company that did not use Rice Consulting and be that weaker link. Randy, thanks again for being here with me. I've really enjoyed
this
topic. Last question. You recognized my trademark question. If you're picked up at the airport, it's a 20-minute ride to your client, and you realize you can only really tell this person one thing that you really want them to remember about security, what would it be?
It's a people problem. I mean, they're never lose sight that all the answers are not in the tools, that they've got to get this ingrained as a way of thinking. And your greatest threat may not be from the outside of your company. It might be the person that's working next to you. I don't want to sound paranoid here or anything like that, but...
Well, 70% of retail shrinkage is internal.
Yeah.
Why would it be any different here?
Absolutely. And all kinds of internal crimes, corporate espionage, all kinds of stuff happen from actually the people who are the most trusted. It's not the shiftiest looking person that's probably going to be your problem. But probably
they don't give them the password.
Right.
It's opportunity and need.
Right.
Yes.
That's what I would say.
Randy, thanks again.
Thank you, Mickey.
Looking forward to our next visit.
Same here.
If you would like more information about some of the things we're discussing today, visit riceconsulting.com. Be sure to sign up for Randy's free monthly e-newsletter, the Software Quality Advisor newsletter. You can sign up right from Randy's homepage at www.riceconsulting.com. At riceconsulting.com, you can also see a complete list of training courses, articles, links, and places where Randy will be speaking and training in the near future. You can also receive online training and mentoring right at your desk when you need it at riceconsulting.com. Check it out today.